The latest scandal to erupt in the world of finance involves the little-known London Interbank Offered Rate, or LIBOR. Data submitted by major banking institutions is collected, calculated, and used as a benchmark to determine interest rates for interbank loans, as well as $350 trillion worth of consumer products, such as credit cards, private student loans, auto loans, and adjustable-rate mortgages. Investigations in the United Kingdom and the U.S. have uncovered evidence that LIBOR interest rates have been intentionally manipulated by banks over a period of years. While some of the LIBOR rate manipulation may have been motivated to falsely project the financial health of banks in the period around the recent global financial meltdown, other manipulation appears to be linked to individual traders' goal of gaining short-term profits. In either case, however, the bottom line of the scandal is that large amounts of money have been systematically and intentionally stolen from average people all around the world while enriching a small circle of bankers and financial brokers. Investigators in the United Kingdom initially focused on the involvement of Barclays Bank of Britain, whose CEO Bob Diamond was forced to resign as his bank paid $450 million to settle accusations of illegal interest rate manipulation. Other banks which may soon face prosecution and civil litigation include J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and UBS. Your reporter spoke with Robert Scheer, editor-in-chief at TruthDig.com, former Los Angeles Times national correspondent and author of the book The Great American Stick-Up. Here he discusses the LIBOR scandal as the latest example of the finance industry's culture of corruption.
The basic incentive, this all started as the markets were collapsing in 2007, 2008, they wanted to show that aside from government infusions of money, they could go out on the open market and raise money at a reasonable rate. So their obligation was to honestly report what they were having to pay for money to make loans out in the market. And one of their big incentives was to make it seem like they were so solid that they could get money at a reasonable rate. That was one of the big incentives here, but they also were covering their bets on all sorts of things, they make money on those bets and on the derivatives that have been sold and what's in those packages. Sometimes that is to the benefit of other people. For instance, since so much of the housing mortgage stuff was dependent upon interest rates and keeping interest rates low, they wanted to keep that rate low. But they also were betting, and they bet against themselves, they bet against their products, they bet every different way, and they were reaping enormous profit from what is basically insider trading. If they can set the rate, then they can bet that the rate will be a certain place. And that's really what happened here. There was collusion. And the reason they got nailed is the same reason Ken Lay got nailed at Enron, was there's an email trail. And the government and both the Justice Department here and over in England were able to get these emails. And the cynicism of all this was revealed, as it was in Enron, you know, collusion between the banks and let's hustle and let's swindle the average consumer. And that's what happened here. And there was testimony by one of the leading figures in the English government confirming that it was the bank's responsibility. This is by no means over. There was a plea bargain. Barclays agreed to pay $450 million in penalty. They accepted the facts, which are disastrous, but there will be a lot of lawsuits going after the people involved, because the people on the other end, when they made money, other people lost money. That's how it works. So if you're rigging these rates so that your bets come out looking good, other people are going to be hurt by it. And they also have lawyers, and they can go sue and show damages. Barclays itself got immunity because it's assumed they will now help both of these governments on both sides of the Atlantic figure this stuff out and go after the other banks. And so that's the next stage. And this is by no means over. We're now going to go through each bank, and we're going to have lots of lawsuits, and this will go on for a decade.
Is there any way to estimate, with so many trillions of dollars involved here, the amount of money that was stolen from average consumers? Like, as you referred to, it affected mortgage rates, and entire cities like Baltimore were affected. Is there any way to estimate what was stolen?
Well, those estimates will come from the lawsuits. I mean, trust me, the people who run pension funds and, you know, who have lost big money, they also have lawyers and accountants, and they will assess damages just as they did when they went off after Bernie Madoff, who was really an amateur joke compared to what these people do. I think the real cause is what it's done to the world economy. You know, you can't trust economic activity. You can't trust what the Spanish do. You can't trust what the Italians do. You can't trust what the Americans do. And when you have this lack of confidence in the international economy, you don't know what to price anything. You don't know what investments. You don't know where the market's going to be in the future. So the costs ultimately are absolutely disastrous.
Let's talk about accountability. There's a term called moral hazard, and if people are not punished for the crimes, economic crimes that we have unfolding over these bunch of years, they'll go out and do it again. And we have that right now, don't we? Moral hazard, because the laws as they are written cannot keep these bankers accountable who commit such devastating crimes.
You know, it's deeper than that. You sort of have to go back to, I don't know, Confucius, Aristotle, Jesus. You know, some of the Old Testament wisdom about usury. There always was a teaching of accountability. Don't take advantage of the vulnerable. Don't fleece the poor. You know, don't lie and swindle your fellow tribesmen. We lost all that. What we started teaching in then the business schools, the law schools, was how to be a legal swindler. Ethics came to be defined as what can you do right up to the edge of the law that will profit you, and if you can't do it there, let's change the law. So we'll make things that should be, obviously should be illegal, we'll make them legal. That's what happened here. So it's really very dangerous when the smartest people, the people who test the best, go to the best schools, then turn that into a craftiness, they become swindlers. That is really the omnipresent danger in this world right now. We have the hustlers in charge. And because of things like, Supreme Court decisions on campaign finance, Citizens United, this sort of thing, the role of money in the current presidential election, there's no limit to their greed, and as a result, they will suffocate on their own greed. You're talking about moral hazard. Not only don't they go to jail, they're not shamed in any way. They're still admitted to polite company. They're still honored. And they'll probably won't go to jail, and they'll have their, hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars put away. And you're right, moral hazard is the right word. There's no accountability. There's no shame. And since they control the media and political system, there isn't much likelihood that they are going to be subject to shame.
That was Robert Scheer, editor-in-chief at TruthDig.com and author of the book, The Great American Stick-Up, How Reagan Republicans and Clinton Democrats Enriched Wall Street While Mugging Main Street. For more information on the LIBOR and related financial scandals, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.